The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Have a good one today. Peter Dunn, a.k.a. Pete the Planner, is an award-winning comedian and an award-winning financial mind. He's a USA Today columnist, also the author of 10 books, six of which were featured in a nationwide launch at Barnes & Noble. He's been a host of a popular radio show, and Pete has also appeared on many, many news outlets, including CNN, Fox, Fox Business, as well as other syndicated radio programs. And he's going to be on with me here in just a little bit. But before we get to Pete and what he's all about, let's do a little news of the week, brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. If you'd like to learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to their website. I would Google them, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, of course, supported by us here at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. All right. From by the numbers, you know, since 1950, and this is when I talk about estimating the return, estimating, remember, we're playing horseshoes here, not even hand grenades, horseshoes, on what I think I can get over a period of time to meet my expectations. Since 1950, there's been 59 different 10-year periods, so like 1950 to 59, 51 to 60, you know, 52 to 61, I mean, you get it, where the S&P 500 has gained at least 6% per year. That's 48 out of the 59 decade-long periods, 81% of the time. So when I focus on what do I think the market can do over the next 10 years, and I'm guesstimating, I've been using about 7, and I could be completely wrong. So you never know. That's why you set it, and you don't forget it, like a Ronco rotisserie cooker, which I do love as well. But you have to set it and monitor it like a cooker, a smoker, or my big green egg, something like that. All right. Now, this is what I call sequence of return risk. If a person had $1 million and they invested 100% of it in the S&P 500 back in 1973, hint, that was a very bad decade, and they actually withdrew $100,000 a year out of it, which I would never recommend, that's 10%, and increased it by inflation each year, that would be suicide. They would be out of money in just 9 years. A second person with $1 million invested in the S&P 500, and they started in 1982 withdrawing the exact same amount, they'd have over $5 million after 36 years. That's what you call sequence of return risk. The first one worked out bad. The second one worked out good. All right, we ended the month of February, and I don't know if my numbers are correct, but it looks like it's the first down month that we've had since October of 2016. A down month in February would end, and did end, that stock market's index record-tying 15 consecutive months of total return that was positive. The Federal Reserve actually, you know, we always worry about who owns all the U.S. Treasuries. Well, the Federal Reserve does. They own more Treasury securities at the end of 2017 than Japan and China combined. That comes from the Treasury Department. And then for those of you that have new grandchildren or maybe a new baby on the way, start right away. A child born in February of 1996, 22 years ago, who started college in the fall of 14 and is scheduled to graduate from an average four-year public in-state college in May of 18. Had you invested, and I know you're thinking, why are you telling me this now, but had you put $135 a month at the child's birth each and every month and you earned an average of 8% on all the dollars, you would have had enough money to pay for that four-year college expense of tuition, fees, room, and board for the entire 4 years. The cost was almost $80,000. So $135 versus coming up with $80,000, I would take the $135 all day long. And finally, fuzzy math. You know how much I love fuzzy math. The baseline budget projections for the U.S. as of 2018 began to show outlays that exceeded receipts by $11.5 trillion over the next 10 years. When the White House just released their budget projections on Monday, the 12th of February, they said that the outlays exceeding receipts would only be $7.1 trillion, thereby declaring a total deficit reduction of $4.4 trillion. This comes from the Office of Management and Budget. So when you hear a total deficit reduction, that still means we're running a major, major deficit, and that's what I call fuzzy math. All right, guys, when we come back, we'll be joined by the famous Pete the Planner. We're going to find out what Pete's all about, the mission that drives him daily, and how it's all about helping people. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I'm really excited about having Pete Durdun, a.k.a. Pete the Planner. Like I mentioned, he's an award-winning comedian and an award-winning financial mind. He is a USA Today columnist, the author of many, many books, featured in on lots of different programs all around the country. And now we have him here on Your Money with David Hayes in South Central Indiana. And Pete, you're just from up the road in Carmel, Indiana.
That's right. It's the old thing. I'm from Central Indiana, which either means I'm from Indianapolis, but I actually live in Carmel, you know how it goes.
Yeah, and I'm in South Central Indiana, so I don't know what that
exactly means.
This means I'm a little more hillbilly than you are living down south.
I don't know about that. Yeah. I don't know.
Pete the Planner, I love it. I've heard your voice many times, of course, on your own radio show, and you've been on many national shows as well, like CNN, Fox News, Fox Business. And you and I talked on the phone a few months ago, and we were both kind of have the same passion, and that's about financial wellness and getting people in the workplace to a point where they don't have the financial stresses of everyday financial life. And I saw a statistic recently that said that in 2016, a retirement confidence survey said that 63% of people say that they're very or somewhat confident they'll have enough money to retire. But 78% said they think they can at least cover basic expenses. But only a handful of the people actually ever calculated what they would need to save to retire. And I think when I step back and look at how incredibly insane that is, that no one's even sat down to calculate it, and then to think, okay, why should I even care? Well, I should care, because if these people don't save enough money, someone's going to have to pay for their stuff. Someone's going to have to pay for their health care. Someone's going to have to pay for their housing, their food, everything. So, Pete, I think what I've noticed out of you is you get right to the grassroots. You help the people primarily through your website, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and also through the employer. You're going to the people, which I admire a great deal. So thank you for that, Pete.
No, it's my pleasure, and it truly is my pleasure. I was a financial advisor for a long time in the early 2000s, right? And what I just kept noticing is that people had decent incomes, people had okay, asset totals, but ultimately, if your plan was to have a lot of money, yet your plan also was, unfortunately, you need a lot of money, David, the math doesn't work there. We have to get to a point where we're breaking our dependency on our income, and the primary reason for that is because the game has changed. We no longer have the pensions that we had, in the 70s and the 80s. The rules are different now. And I think the majority of Americans haven't figured out where in the world their core retirement income is coming from. And I bet you see that every single day. Just the assumption, like these statistics you gave, the assumption that somehow, mystically, magically, it's all going to work out.
Well, back in the day, you mentioned Social Security, pensions, and you really didn't have to rely much at all on your own personal savings. And I think that the children of the Depression or, that group of people, they didn't have to. And then as their kids got into the workplace, the baby boomers, some had pensions, some did not. Many of them went away. But now they're starting to retire, and they're like, no one told us about this. No one told me how to get, which is now a cool term, retirement ready. And what I'm seeing happening is their kids are getting jobs, and the very first thing that they say is, you have to do this. You have to put this money away. I saw a piece you wrote, I think, a week or two ago about just taking personal responsibility, and I talked about it last week on my show in preparation to having you on this week, and that, many people found it that it was their personal responsibility to take care of their own health, but 44% felt their physician was primarily responsible for their health. And I loved how you said, I'm pretty sure I just read the personal responsibility obituary, which I thought was fantastic.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing about that, David. It's like, I feel that way. Like, I'm a huge proponent of personal responsibility. And, of course, there are cases where, if we're being honest, yeah, the physician is the key to a person's physical health because of whatever condition they're dealing with. But in our own financial lives, man, who else is there? What's the backup plan? Social Security, as I'm sure you talk about quite a bit on this show, it is a safety net. It is not... It's not Plan A, and pensions aren't really there. So Plan A is yourself, which some people step up to that. Some people, I don't know what some people do, David. Sometimes I feel like as much as I value prayer, prayer is not actually a great financial strategy. You know, it's tough. I don't know what people expect to happen other than the old, we'll figure it out.
Right,
right,
right. Oh, yeah, for sure. Take an optimistic view of it. We've been doing some health and wellness programs for a local employer, which at some point I'm going to have to pull you in on because it's getting bigger than I am. And we talked about, hey, how do you calculate what you're going to need? And we did a very basic calculation on a, you know, just how it works. And people were eating it up like they, you know, we just unveiled the biggest secret in the world to them on how to be, you know, healthy and wealthy and wise. It was incredible. And it was so simple. And they just don't know. And I think that's where you have been doing such a great job of educating people on exactly what they're going to need to do and help inspire them. Because, you know, you can't do it for them. You know, I can't do it for you. I can only help inspire you to do what you know you need to do to get you where you need to be. Pete, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to dig into some more of this about personal responsibility. I want to talk about who really is responsible. We already said that it's you. And as I've coined here on this show, we're kind of in that yo-yo world, and that stands for you're on your own. So we'll get Pete's view on that. Also, what role should the employer play in all of this? It's certainly not their responsibility, but they can play an important role. And why should they? And that's what I want to get to. Why should they care about this? Why should they play an important role? Because at the end of all of this, it's their employees that they need to be productive and have their minds clear of all this clutter, and that will make them more productive. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. We're live here with Pete the Planner, and if you'd like to learn more about Pete and what he does and what he's all about, go to, very easy, PeteThePlanner.com. I was just on your website before I started the show and saw your lovely family there as well, and just read all about your mission and really what drives you each and every day. And thought it'd be nice if you shared that with everyone, Pete, because I think it's very, noble is maybe the right word, that you've taken on this role of trying to educate the masses in a very fluid and easy way so that people don't feel like it's a hurdle that they have to get over. It's simply a path for them to go on.
Well, no, I appreciate that. I mean, the reality is money is behavior. You know, how we deal with money, it's an extension of our behavior, a manifestation. And David, I'll speak for myself here. I won't speak for you or anybody else. But from time to time, I have behavior issues. You can ask my mother that. You can ask my wife that. You can ask my physician that. Health behavior is a thing that I've struggled with over the years. Of when I'm on the road speaking and flying around, like, I want to eat a cheeseburger and drink a beer. David, that's a bad idea to do on a pretty regular basis. And so what I found is in finding self-control, that's how I'm able to get the outcomes I want. And for those people in their lives that have found financial self-control, holy cow. I mean, it is the greatest pleasure. I mean, sometimes we get off track because we seek more immediate pleasure, David, right? We go out to eat, or we go to the mall, or we get on Amazon, or we go on vacations, and because we're seeking pleasure. We want to feel good. But what I've learned ultimately, and what I try to teach people, is that if you can set your goals, which you guys help people with every single day, and then track towards those goals using self-control and being able to pass up the pleasures of now for the ultimate pleasure of self-control, it is like something I can't even describe. It is the greatest pleasure.
It's a great peace of mind, and it's nice to just feel like you're in control. You know, we were talking about budgeting at this event we were doing, and we really quit calling it budgeting because that sounds so, you know, like you're being constrained to a spending plan. And I think some of the terminology that you use, we probably have borrowed or maybe stolen to use. But it's when you can control your spending, it's what I choose to spend it on. Yeah, it's a budget, but it just puts a little different spin on it. Let's quickly talk about, you know, the role that the government plays in helping people become, you know, financially stable, it's really not. We mentioned Social Security. For many people, it should be there. Obviously, the solvency of it's in question, but I've been assuring people that at some point, as we do in this country, nothing ever happens until we're in a crisis and then we do something about it. We'll fix Social Security, but it's not meant to be your sole source of income, even though many people do rely on that. But the role of the employer, I know that the employer generally provides a retirement plan with good funds and fair expenses, and they typically are trying to provide some education. Generally, that's given from the provider, the 401k provider. But it's all about, hey, it's here electronically. If you'd like to come and engage us electronically only, and we really aren't giving you any advice. We're just kind of giving you information. Tell us about, in your opinion, the role of the employer and why the employer should even care about this.
Well, I hope in the spirit of time you allow me to speak frankly on this topic, because sometimes it's not fun to hear what I'm about to say. As a person prepares for retirement and they really want to retire, or pre-retiree, I want to retire, and they can't, then an employer has a person who doesn't want to be there, who is the most expensive person on the payroll from a seniority standpoint, and the most expensive person to insure. Now, this is an age discrimination, David, because that person doesn't want to be there. They just can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. And on top of that, if you've got your best people from a talent standpoint making suboptimal financial decisions, that's bad. There's a huge portion of upper and middle management who are convinced that they're financially healthy. But guess what, David? Just like me dancing at weddings, they're not as good as they think, right? They're not as healthy as they think. And if you are the owner of a business, just like you are, and your best, you know, I'm doing air quotes here with my fingers, if your best people are not making great financial decisions for themselves, what makes anyone think that when they walk through the doors of the company that all of a sudden they're financial geniuses? So we simply try to put people in a path to make better personal financial decisions for themselves so that there's a reasonable expectation that they can cross over those skills and judgment into the workplace, which then benefits the organization.
I was reading a piece from John Hancock this week, and it was talking about the financial stress and how it impacts employee productivity. So, yeah, we have these lingering folks that can't leave. They're costing us a lot of money. But also that you know, single mom with two kids working on the factory floor trying to make ends meet, if she's always worried about how they're going to pay their utility bill or how they're going to pay the rent or the mortgage payment or how they're going to get gas in the car or pay for childcare, whatever it might be, by helping these people better manage their money, their resources, will take some of that financial stress off, and it should increase employee productivity, right?
Yeah, and what's actually crueler than that, in some weird, odd twist of fate, you know what makes you feel like you have money? Spending money. So if you're stressed and you're like, oh, I don't have any money, this feels awful, you will go participate in retail therapy, which is a real thing, and you will spend money and hurt yourself worse. Just when I'm stressed about my health, sometimes I'm like, you know, I want to think about this over a pizza, you know, like things aren't going well here. That's what ends up happening. So by helping people learn to lean into their financial stress and not ignore it. David, that's a weird trend that's happening right now, is that people have become so tolerant of poor financial conditions within their own lives that they've learned to deal with stress that they shouldn't have learned how to deal with. Instead, they should have leaned into that stress, addressed the cause of the stress, and earned the right to ignore the stress. But, you know, a lot of these stress numbers that you just referenced with John Hancock or whoever's putting them out, I'm getting to this point where I'm starting to not believe the statistics, because more people should be stressed than are stressed because of their tolerance of stress. I mean, this is clearly, I'm passionate about it. This is what I do, and I just feel like a lot of times employers are missing the boat when it comes to helping people find confidence within their financial situation.
You know, it's funny you said that their stress level is so high, then their tolerance has gone up. I had surgery on my neck last year to relieve some nerve pain. And one of the physicians said, man, you must have had a very high pain tolerance. And I'm like, well, I don't really know. But after dealing with this for 7 years and it got more painful and more painful and more painful, I thought, well, maybe it's because my, you know, my pain gotten so bad that I didn't really know how not to deal with it. So I think now, as you just mentioned, I don't know that I believe these statistics, you know, because I'm looking through this report from John Hancock, and it's a little bit, you know, eye-opening and alarming at times, but it could be even worse than what we think. So that's pretty profound stuff. Now everyone's talking about this stuff now. It's kind of the new thing, you know, financial wellness and retirement readiness. But it feels to me like it's just talk, or that people have to really engage for them to have someone to help. But no one has seemed to systematize it like you have and your group has, Pete. And to make it clear, Pete doesn't sell anything. He doesn't sell investments. He doesn't sell insurance. You know, he's not going to, you know, provide the retirement plan for your employees. He's an educator. He's a teacher. He's a coach. And his system is really good, PeteThePlanner.com. And that's why I like your approach so well, Pete, because it's my approach. I mean, it's my mission as well to educate, communicate, and giving people confidence in our abilities to serve them. That's our mission statement, has been for 24 years and hasn't changed. And I love it. But what I think is so critical is that employers realize that how important this is and what they get out of this. You know, what do they get out of it? The other thing they get, I think, is loyalty. If you have a paternalistic or maternalistic, you know, for my mother's sake, employer that you think, you know what, these guys, they really care about me. And this isn't the institution that cares about me. It's the people within the institution, let's make that clear, that care about you. And with, I think, an assault on labor right now, I mean, none of my buddies that run companies can find any workers. Everyone's got a job. And, you know, to prevent your worker from slipping over to another job for an extra dollar or two more, I think some of this stuff can create a stickiness with your employees through loyalty, don't you think?
Yeah, and I'm going to be the most cliche. Anyone's been on your radio show in a really long time here for a second, but it's the old give a man a fish, teach a man to fish thing. You know, if you can show someone the skills, the tricks, the tips to make their life easier, isn't that better than just giving them more money? And I know the argument of the wage gap here and the wealth gap is to say, people need to be paid more. You know what, Dave? I actually agree with that sentiment. But I will tell you, because I've been doing this a long time, more resources for the people that are not resourceful is just more negative ammunition to do bad stuff with. And yeah, I know how condescending that sounds. And I apologize to everyone who's going to send you ugly emails about that, David. But it's the truth. Unless you're resourceful, more resources will only magnify who you are, and that's not good.
It's almost like giving more drugs to a drug addict. You know, they're already making bad choices. Oh, here's some more, make you feel a little bit better. So, yeah, it's
exactly.
It's something else. I wanted to just ask you about the savings rate in America. You know, we hear that the savings rate, you know, had gone up. Now it's coming back down. And I think there's some fuzzy math there because I don't believe that they're counting the money that goes into a 401k plan as the savings rate, because it's been my kind of experience, going back to my earlier comment, that number one, as the baby boomers have aged, and let's say they're in their mid to upper 50s or all the way up to age 70, and their kids have hopefully moved out of the house and off the payroll, they are doing two things. They are saving like wild people to try and get ready for whatever it is that's coming. They are paying down their debts, which is not overly expansive to the economy, and they've convinced their kids that you guys right now, my 27-year-old kid, and I don't mind 17, but it's 27, you've got to put money in this 401k, and yes, 10, 15%. Your other people on the radio say 10, 15. It's getting pounded into people's minds finally, and I'm seeing savings rates, at least in 401k plans, and with auto enrolls and auto escalators and auto investments and all of that, which I think are really good and really important, that savings are pretty solid. So when you hear that the savings rate's declining, I don't see that, Pete. I'm wondering what you see, because you're boots on the ground all the time working with people and employees of employers.
I think we're pretty fickle that way, right? I think what ends up happening is consumer confidence numbers rise, which by all indication they are, is that people exhale and they say, we're good. We're fine. We can let off the gas a little bit. And so, David, what I think ends up happening there is that the saving rate does dip during good economic times. I would be surprised if there was, and we don't know the numbers right now, but within the last 12 months, if there hasn't been a huge dip in savings rate, especially with things like tax cuts, right? Because all you ever hear with tax cuts is, you can go out and do the things you need to do. Has a politician ever said the words, oh, good, now you can save more for retirement and create more stability? No.
They want you
to spend
it. You
get more money. Yeah, they want you to spend it. That's their plan. It's a bad plan.
Right. So back in 2008, I was driving by the mall, and, you know, the economy was in the tank. Everyone, and I was like, you know, I said, we really need consumer spending to get back. We need people to get their jobs back. We need money in the system to make this thing go forward again. So I'm driving by, I was driving by the mall, and it was packed, right around packed in 2000. It was Christmas of 2008. And I said, man, that's awesome. Look at all these people up there at the mall shopping. And my wife says, I thought you told me we had to cut back this year. And I go, yeah, we're cutting back, but I'm really happy to see all these people spending money that are in the mall, because that's what makes this thing go. So, yeah, but the savings rate, I think they calculate that on what you bring home. I think, so like you said, I feel great about my job. I'm putting plenty of money away in my retirement. I'm going to go spend the money. So, yeah, they don't want to encourage you to do good things with your money. They want you to do bad things with their money. All the tax laws have always been written to control our behavior somewhat. Pete the Planner has been my guest. And, Pete, how did you come up with that title of Pete the Planner? I love it.
I wish it was this amazing story, but basically I had a really lame email address coming out of college, and I had a client say, hey, that's really unprofessional. You should probably choose something different. And for some reason, I thought Pete the Planner at sbcglobal.net was more professional, and so there's the happy accident.
That's like when I was – so I started my company when I was 24, and it's called Comprehensive Financial Consultants, and they go, how did you come up with that name? I said, well – I kind of wanted this comprehensive approach. I was only 24, so I didn't think putting my name on the shingle would make any sense. So I thought, what the heck, Comprehensive Financial Consultants. And 24 years later, it's still Comprehensive Financial Consultants. So same story, just different life. Pete, thank you so much. Any last words of wisdom and advice for people, or maybe areas we can direct our listeners to help improve their lives financially?
Yeah, find a mirror, look the person in the eye, because that's your partner. I mean, that's who's going to get this thing done. There is no trend that says help is on the way. The person staring back at you is the help. You are plan A. There is no plan B.
Pete the Planner, everyone. PeteThePlanner.com if you want to check out more. Pete, thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll be in touch soon and hopefully do some work together.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, man. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you know how much I love making fun of pundits? Well, there was a great Wall Street Journal article, How Pundits Never Get It Wrong, and I'm going to tell you why. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we've been over at Cook recently doing some financial wellness, and don't worry if you work at a different Cook place than Park 48, we'll be over there soon. And you know, a lot of them just can't get enough of this stuff. They love it, the financial education and the help. And what's cool is now that we've been back like four or five times, when you sort of survey and say, hey, who has implemented this or who has done that, you're getting testimonials, which then breeds more excitement and gets more people going and involved. So it works. Financial education, it works. Now, I wanted to go over this because I think it's really funny. How pundits never get it wrong. Call it a 40% chance. For instance, this comes out of the Wall Street Journal. What are the chances that you're actually going to make it to the end of my radio show and listen to all of it? I'm going to say 40%. If you make it, that prediction looks pretty smart. If you don't, well, the odds were against it anyway. That's the same 40% rule that is a favorite of forecasting tactics on Wall Street. And really, I'm just telling you this so now when people say it, you can laugh. Analysts and other pundits try to make a bold call without being too bold or too wrong. Even former Prime Minister Tony Blair got into the act last month. He said there's a 40% chance that Brexit will be reversed. Okay. Well, if it does, then Tony Blair will be like, oh, yeah, I told you there was a good chance. If it doesn't happen, well, it really wasn't that great of a chance after all. The nice thing about the 40% rule is that you never have to say you were wrong. You can predict the Dow Jones has a 40% chance of hitting 30,000 before the end of the year. Get it right, you look like a genius. Get it wrong, you can say, well, I told you it probably wouldn't happen. I just said there was a chance. That's the way it works. I didn't say it was likely. I just said it was a strong possibility. You get it now? Even with this 24-hour news cycle outlet, cable channels and newspapers are always looking for an expert to weigh in. In fact, you know, we've been quoted in so many national magazines and publications lately. Today we talked to a writer, and you know, I'm not gonna start using the 40% rule. I'm not gonna do it. But it is funny because they will say, "What do you think the percentage is, or what's the chance that this is gonna happen or that's gonna happen?" They're looking for someone to say something that will generate clicks. So if they offer if I offered an audacious estimate, that's gonna get clicks. I mean, that's why Harry Dent gets clicks. Harry says the Dow is going to get to 2,000. Well, people are gonna click and see what Harry has to say. So when you think about all these people that are giving all of these great predictions, just understand that they're usually wrong, but they also hedge their bets by saying there's a 40% chance, because a big whiff can ding a forecaster's reputation forever. I mean, look at this one. Nate Silver, he became America's most famous election forecaster when he called all 50 states correctly back in 2012. But then 4 years later, he was, of course, criticized for repeatedly projecting that Donald Trump stood no chance of even winning the Republican primary. And then he said he gave Hillary Clinton a 71% chance of victory in the general election, which, of course, he was wrong. And then he goes back and says, well, it was still useful information. But they need to protect their reputations. That's why these pundits hedge. They may not provide a date either for when this forecast will occur. You know, broken clocks write twice a day. I mean, they'll generally also cluster their forecast together to make it more likely that one of the many forecasts will happen. Like the Citigroup, they came out and said there was a 40% chance that Apple is going to buy Netflix, but a 25% chance that they would buy, that Apple would buy Walt Disney, a 10% chance that it would buy each or one of the three main video game makers, and a 5% chance it would buy Tesla. If you add up 5, 10, 25, and 40, that equals 100. That means that mathematically, it's certain that Apple will buy at least one of them, which that would then make this hedge fund manager over at Citigroup look very, very smart. So remember, the old 40% trick. That's what we've been pulled over our eyes for many, many years. So listen, there's a 40% chance that I'm going to take this break and come back. So we'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You knew there was a 100% chance I'd be back. Welcome to Your Money with David Hayes. You know, a few weeks ago, maybe last week, I lose track, I gave a couple of examples on good reasons to retire later. So if you're in your 50s and you're unsure you have enough money in retirement savings, then you have two basic financial choices. You can start saving and putting away more money than you currently do, or you could work longer and have fewer years in retirement to fund. And I didn't really get into this in great detail, but I thought I would tonight. The second choice may be a little more manageable than putting more money away, just simply working a year longer or a couple years longer. Research suggests that working longer might be a really good way to address this shortfall. Last month, the National Bureau of Economic Research published a paper on this topic, and its conclusions were pretty significant and pretty impactful and pretty simple. The four economists writing the report maintain that when you reach your mid-60s, staying on the job just one more year could help you a lot. Waiting a little longer to file Social Security also becomes a big plus. One of the most noteworthy findings, by the time you're 66, staying on the job just at 3 to 6 additional months will do as much for your standard of living in retirement as if you contributed 1% more to your retirement plan for 30 years. Wow, so staying on just 3 to 6 months more would be like putting an extra 1% in your retirement for 30 years. Like, here's an example. A 66-year-old who had put 9% of their money into the employee retirement plan during their whole 30-year career, had they simply put 10% of their pay away, they would have had 11.11% more money in that retirement account. Plus, obviously, working a little longer, that one extra year, if you're 66, allows you to file at 67 with Social Security, not 66, and getting a lot more money. And working you know, the 67 might be a tall order for some of us, not for yours truly. Right now, only a third of American workers actually retire after the age of 65, which is interesting because many think they plan to work past 65, but stuff comes up. You know, lump sums are offered to get you out, or some other incentive, maybe, you know, your health concerns will push you out. About a fifth retire at age 60 or younger, believe it or not. So perhaps the ambitious, energetic baby boom generation that runs between about 55 and 70 will alter those percentages, but we'll see. My dad's still working. He's 70, right? So who knows? He might work till he's 100. A hundo, Dad. Let's make it that. Let's give it a shot. You know, but working just one or two more years might be worthwhile for other reasons as well. Your invested assets have a couple more years to compound before you start drawing on those. And if you've had assets growing for decades, even compounding those bigger numbers are more significant. If you have a $350,000 account growing at 6% in a retirement fund, waiting just a year will make that grow by over $21,000. Waiting five more years, it would grow by another $118,000. That's assuming you don't put any more money in. So when you run these calculations, you go, if I just worked two more years, are you kidding me? I'd have $200,000 more, plus I would have two more years of earnings, plus I get to you know, have more Social Security. So spending another year on the job might help you become even vested in a pension plan. You know, maybe you're not completely vested. Not a lot of pension plans out there, and usually if you've been somewhere for, you know, 10 years or more, you're definitely vested. Puts you in a position to get more Social Security. If you wait to 65, obviously you don't have to worry about health insurance. Medicare kicks in, and then you have your supplements and your you know, Part B and things like that. So you'd have to worry a little bit about that. But my point was, last week or the week before when I talked about this, was retire later and you might be doing yourself a monster financial favor. So consider the idea. Be sure to consult with your financial advisor about this that you know and you trust and that will help guide you through this retirement process. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, wrap up the big show. I'll talk to you about my experience at the Bob Knight event when we come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I thought, wouldn't it have been funny if I would have come back from the last break and pretended to not be here and then said, hey, I said there was a 40% chance I might not come back. All right, looking forward to after the show meeting my son for dinner. My wife's going to Cinderella at the auditorium. I guess she didn't think we would like that, so we were not invited. And then he and I are going to go kind of look at some real estate. I'm going to try to teach him how to be an investor in real estate. He's 17. Think about this. I mean, I think this is pretty ambitious, but let's say that as a kid, and you could help him, you know, accumulate some property. And I'm just going to make this up. Let's say that over the next 5 years, a person could build a small real estate portfolio of 100, or I'm sorry, let's say 50 residential homes. And they were not real fancy homes. Maybe they're worth $100,000 a piece. You borrow the money, you know, you don't borrow all of it, you can't borrow all of it, but then you rent them, you take care of them, you work on them. 20 years later, they're completely paid off. And let's say that they're now worth $200,000, and that's probably likely 100 to 200 over 20 years. Now I have 50 homes worth $200,000 apiece, completely paid off. That's like $10 million of real estate. And you would be, you know, less than 40 years old, let's say. That sounds like something that I ought to teach my son to do if I know how to do it. And since I do, I'm going to show him how, and we'll see where it goes. So in 20 years, I'll let you know how it works out. My guess is it won't work out even close to the way I just described it. Hey, I went to the, obviously we were one of the sponsors of the night with Coach Knight over at Bloomington South. A nice event. It was kind of quaint. It wasn't packed full of people. There were several hundred people there. And he and Bob Hamill just kind of had a conversation. And really, it was a couple old guys hanging out, old buddies talking. And we had had a nice night. Well, when the event was over, the people that helped sponsor the event were able to go downstairs and talk with Coach if we wanted to. And it was getting kind of late, so a lot of them boogied out. But I ran down there with Misty and Will, and there were maybe 40 people down there. But Coach Knight had to get back to Indianapolis, so they didn't allow him to stay there very long. But I went up to him. I was the first one up to him. And you know, and I asked how Pat was. How's Pat? And he said, my son Pat? I go, yeah, how's he doing? And he said, he's doing great, and told me a little bit about what's going on. And then I had to tell him a story. Pat Knight was on an AAU basketball team with myself. Pat was a year behind me in high school. But I was on that same team, like Chris Lawson. You guys know that name as well. Probably around 7th or 8th grade. Now, back then, I was about 5'10" and weighed about, 140 pounds as a 7th or 8th grader. By the time I was a senior, I was barely, not even 5'11", maybe 5'11", and weighed about 150 pounds. So just to give you some perspective why I would have been on an AAU basketball team with Pat Knight, Chris Lawson's, and others like that. But anyway, we were up in Chicago playing in this big tournament, and we were in the Final Four playing against Sean Kemp, who played at Concord High School, if you remember that. And it was just this team we were playing against were crazy athletic. Well, they found out that Pat was Coach Knight's son. And they kept saying to him, you're not his son. You're not Coach Knight's son. And we're all like, yeah, he is Coach Knight's son. Now remember, Pat was a year behind me, so he's probably like twelve years old. And remember, even though Pat was probably, I don't know how tall he was, not real tall, but he ended up getting tall. I mean, his dad's like 6'6". My dad's 5'6". So I think you knew where I was headed. In fact, they told me after the season I needed to learn how to handle the ball better because there wasn't much of a chance I would grow. Thanks, Joe Walker, for that one. And he was right. He was a prophet. But anyway, he knew my dad worked with my dad, knew I was not going to grow much. So anyway, these kids finally were like, all right, we got to see your jump shot. Let me see your jump shot. So poor old Pat, he shoots a baseline jumper, bangs it off the rim. And they were like, you're not Coach Knight's son. There's no way. And they all walked away, and we had a good laugh about that. So I told Coach that story, and he got a big smile on his face. But it was a nice night. We appreciated being part of it. And like I said, it was fun. And I doubt he'll be back. I think, age is getting to him, and, memory's slipping a little bit. But, who doesn't have their memory slip a little bit the older you get? Hey, I hope you enjoyed the program with Pete the Planner. And Pete is a dynamic guy, and I'm hoping to do some work with him in delivering financial education to employers. And I talk about the big employers, but listen, it is so important that, and I hear these stories all the time where someone says, someone at my job when I was first starting told me to do this. My Aunt Jane, she worked at RCA in human resources. I can't tell you the number of people that said, if it wasn't for your Aunt Jane, I wouldn't have this. And it was simply her saying, you have to do this. You need to do this. And even when they would say, I can't afford to do it, she would say, you cannot not afford to do it. So if you are a person at a job and you have the ability to influence the thoughts and the behaviors and actions of some younger people at your job, tell them to do what they need to do. It can be so simple. Just put the money away. What the investments are, that's like second fiddle. The number one thing you have to do is put it away. Out of sight, out of mind, do it early, do it often, and you'll be amazed how much money you'll have at retirement. And that same person's going to say to someone, if it wasn't for fill in the blank, I would not have what I have today. So be a mentor, help people get to where they need to be, and sometimes it's just a little comment like that that will help. All right, guys, I'm going to take a break, and it's going to be the final break of the show because I got to get the heck out of here, and we're going to go have some dinner with my son. This has been Your Money with David Hayes.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.